But this is, I'm going to go ahead and preface this. This is probably our farthest northern growing area and probably the area that's most restricted by time. So with that.
All right, thank you, David. He just gave me a talk, so we can talk about anything else if you want to. All right, no, I want to go ahead and acknowledge some counterparts here. Carrie Knott in Kentucky, Laura Lindsay in Ohio State. The Ohio State. Sorry, Harold, I saw you up there. I knew you'd give me a hard time. Bill Wiebold of Missouri and Emerson as well, and a few others. So just kind of want to give a perspective on where Double Crop is in North Central, so Midwest, you can call it loosely. So I'll talk about true double crop, be very similar to what Jeremy and Doug's already talked about, but then also kind of switch into some of our more innovative, something that's not necessarily new, but we're kind of getting back to it again on the relay cropping and some advances there. So out of just kind of understanding, Midwest double crop soybean is second if you look at the USDA ERS, which makes no sense to me, but that's what the data say, right? It's second, quote. 4.4 million hectares, whereas Southeast is a little over 6.5. And included in that is Missouri and Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, and a portion of Tennessee, believe it or not, in this one report. But just kind of give that framework in terms of what we really mean, this Midwest or North Central, 1.6% of the total crop acreage is what they're talking about. So that 4.5 million hectares is only 1.6 of our actual acre, so quite small. If you're looking at the states that were within there, Kentucky's certainly going to be the top end of that, 30% of those acres within that state, 10% in Missouri, Illinois 5%, Indiana 3%, and Ohio 1%. So we know what we're talking about in double crop, right? That's kind of what I'm driving at. You've seen this graph, but I think it kind of helps set the stage. Most of our double crop, we're talking about those after winter wheat. And so this is just planted by the acres, so darker greens, more acres. You look at the Midwest, there's kind of light greens and a little bit of yellows. And I attempted to put the latitude in there. Really what we're talking about is the 39th parallel. The 39th latitude is that make or break point, that transition point for us, whether we're going to make soybeans in a double crop scenario or it's quite questionable based on your year. Okay. So I tried to overlay these so you can at least have a better understanding within each state. The colors, just look at within each state, darker means that there are more yields within that state, but it gives you an idea where wheat is in those individual states. So Missouri, and then again, I tried to overlay them with the USDA's maps here. And Illinois across the board, Indiana, and of course, you get in a different region, so they're different colors now, same year. A lot in Ohio. So if you're looking across these four states alone, we're thinking on the order of 400,000, 500,000 acres, give or take. Indiana's on the lower end, maybe 300,000. Ohio and Missouri's on the higher end. And looking at the 2016 data, actually Kentucky's down around 400,000 acres, which actually shocked me that it was down that low, pretty much where we're at within Indiana. But the difference is that they can actually double crop those 400,000 acres. We're probably at best our 330,000 acres. Half of those could be double cropped successfully. And then, again, trying to bring in that latitude mark, what we're talking about here. So that frontier you're talking about, David, is really this 39th parallel or I-70. If you want to talk interstates, that's what we're talking about. And then I couldn't get Kentucky to fit right in there. It is its own thing, right? It's brown, too, right? Carrie, you guys are just weird. I have to talk to your USDA guys. Primarily, we're talking about winter wheat, so is our previous crop. Most of us, it's soft reds are going to be our previous crop within these systems. You can get into some of those that are thinking about doing some soft whites, especially if you want to go in beyond the frontier of double crop and get into relay crops. Winter canola, there are some pockets around. I know in western Kentucky, southern Illinois, and southern Indiana, we've got some pockets of winter canola. We've got a crushing facility, I believe, in Kentucky as well as in southern Illinois. So any of the canola that's in Indiana gets shipped over there. Some advantages. I've heard for years that there's, quote, advantages in the canola system over the winter wheat. Some have made the comment, Carrie made the same comment about growers thinking, or at least some marketing campaign that, you know, the wheat has a toxicity, so then you can do better with the double crop soybeans after that. And I know her students done some of the work on previous crop and didn't see any yield response. One comment that was made to me was that also that potentially the canola helped when it did have a yield advantage anecdotally, was that it helps suppress nematode populations. And so you have to start looking at root exudates and different varieties, and that's not the subject of today, but at least give you an idea of what we're talking about. And again, now that we're pushing the frontier, you know, timing is everything. So winter barley's a potential option of trying to get a small grain that's going to give you a shorter window on the winter cycle, so then you can harvest earlier and get that double crop out earlier. Laura made the comment that a malting facility is going to be built in Ohio, maybe, yes?
Central now,
okay. So at any rate, still trying to move that a little bit, so one potential market that might help us if we want to think moving double crops further north, and a few in Kentucky. So again, timing is everything with this, especially you heard from the previous speakers about timely planting, timely harvest. It's even more critical for us. So we want to get in there as quickly as we can to get a good wheat stand established, high-yielding wheat variety that also matures early. So we've got to have this combination. Tiller production is a big part of that. So a few years back, I kind of brought in, okay, where are we in terms of the yield potential with wheat and Hessian fly free dates. This is from Wisconsin down to Kentucky. So it kind of gives that window. We've got a lot of our growers that are within those 10 days of Hessian fly. Most of them are actually probably pushing before, not after Hessian fly free dates. Okay. Timely wheat harvest. So again, I apologize for the poor quality picture, but the idea of getting out there earlier, beyond just our traditional real grain tables, you know, getting out there with a stripper head so we can go in there, higher moisture, and get in there and have a stand established. And so this happens to be a stripper head in southern Indiana. So it just cuts the heads off, not the whole stalk, if you're not familiar with that. So I also heard that Jeremy and Doug was talking about high moisture, and they're talking 15-16%. High moisture for us to try to move the envelope, we're talking low 20s. Is what we're trying to get into. And so we did some work on this in 2012 and 2013 where we had different cultivars within the soft reds and soft whites, and to bring this forward and look at harvest timing, I won't get into the details of that. But in 2012, we gained about 2.5 calendar days, 13, 5 days. So nothing to the order of what I heard earlier today of 4 to 7 days. But I mean, those few days do make a difference for us, and that's what we're trying to gain. If you were to pair this up with an earlier maturing variety that was harvested at high moisture, now we're talking a 7 to 10 day window that we could gain. Okay, so not just an early harvest, not just early maturing wheat variety, but that combination. That's really what we're talking about. And so when we're talking about the wheat harvest, typically in southern Indiana or along the Ohio River, we're talking mid-June, sometimes June 20th. Later years, you're talking last week of June. But as you keep on moving north, obviously that date's going to get pushed further and further behind. So if you go north of that 39th parallel, we're really talking usually about 4th of July harvest. Okay, and so if we can push that in 7 to 10 days into the last week of June to the middle of June, it really helps us. So timely planting is critical. So if you look close enough, you can see the combine in the background, and it's getting planted the same day, right, within minutes. Getting into this a little bit, planting an angle, just kind of getting to the stubble that we have to deal with, so just trying to get a good stand established as well as getting through the ground, stubble management. We have a fair amount of people that are running this for straw and going to the DOTs and whatnot and landscapers, so that's a significant part of driving this system, especially when you're talking wheat prices that are barely above corn prices. The straw is making more for them in a lot of cases than the grain. Again, traditionally our maturity group selection on the double crops are going to be a full season unless we're planting late, and what I mean by that is we're into the middle of July, super late. That's traditional. Again, Jeremy made some comments about how that might be shifting. And a couple of folks from my crew here, and I told them a story back when I was in Agronomy 101, and I had the question of what maturity do I plant in a double crop scenario, and I said a shorter, and it was a big red check mark. Well, it's actually kind of changing now, or maybe it's always been that way and we didn't know it. So that's something that we're looking at as well with a project over the last couple of years. Seed rate, you tell me the soil moisture, I'll tell you the seed rate. right? Because there's going to be times that, you know, 200,000 seeds per acre is going to be plenty good, and there's times that we need to be 250, 275 because of how dry it can be, the wet-dry cycles, and trying to get a stand established, you lose some of those in that wetting-drying cycle. We'll get into some of the data that we actually have on it. This is just 32-degree mark in the fall, and the reason I bring that up is for the tail end of our growing season where we're compressed. This kind of does a lot of averaging over it, so it doesn't quite do as good of a job, and I'll give at least an Indiana-specific one. But if you're looking within the southern areas of Illinois and Indiana, that range is October 11th to October 20th. Okay, so that's when that fall freeze is coming in, so we need to have that double crop matured certainly by that point and before. And actually, we have areas that are going to be even sooner than that. This is in our southwest part of the state, so if you look close enough, it's a 4.0 in this region. Full season 4.5s are fairly common, 4.6s, and so this was a timely plant. This was my first year in 2009, actually. 4.0 versus 4.6, both yielded very well, and you just happen to look at the 4.6, isn't quite finished, but the yields were the same. So it's now we're trading seed size and pod numbers for those yields. In terms of calendar days, to kind of get to this point, we did some work early on looking at maturity group across this double crop, and so when are we reaching our six? Some of the rules of thumb that we started coming out with is find out when your fall freeze typically is and backdate about 90 days, all right? And you need to have that crop up by the time that fall freeze, by that 90-day mark. So if your fall freeze typically was on October 5th, okay, backdate 90 days. Guess what day you need to have that crop up? July 5th. Okay, not planted, but up. Okay, and so that's where some of this started coming into is that we're maturing. We're R6.5, R7. So then even if we get the frost, it's we still got enough seed out there to make it work. Okay, so if you go in the mindset of, let's see if this can works, early 3, so it reached R6, you know, about 75 days after planting. Going up to the 4.5, 4.6s, we're going to be on the order of 85 days, so about a 10-day difference when you look at maturity group. And then if you look at just the spread, so going from, again, super early in terms of double crop standards, about an 80 up to, let's get it growing. Extension guy hates being behind a podium. So 75, 80 goes up to about the 100-day mark, so we're on the order of about 30 days between R6 to R8. Okay, this is Indiana data, and fairly common with other maturity groups. Bill's data out of Missouri is showing a very similar trend, right? The number of days from R5 to R7 with his, concentrating over here a little more on the double crop, about 35 days. So very compressed window to think about yield potential. That's where we're losing a lot of that. In our early days, looking at these maturities and just put them on a percent scale, again, the 4.5s were the typical recommendation. And so based on percent, the range is coming into 85 to 100% of yield potential based on whatever year it was. Coming in actually a half unit shorter, we're 100% every single time with that half unit shorter. So the 3.8, so kind of a shift like Jeremy was seeing with the Mid-South. And then you want to think about going down even further. The 3.5 was right within that same category, the 90th percentile, when you compare it to the other end of the 4.5. So there's quite a bit of range there, at least, and again, 2009, 10, 11, and 12 with that data. Now we certainly start to tail off when we go all the way down to the 3, you know, 1.5 units lower than what we've traditionally recommended. Narrows certainly are the case where we want to be, 15 inches or less, or 38 centimeters. Drills, there's still a few around, but honestly, most of our guys are on 15s, and kind of like it because we do a better job getting seed placed and stand establishment. So in a lot of ways, that narrow row advantage, I'd much rather have a 15-inch planter that does a good job in setting the seed and getting a good stand than a 7.5 that's all over the board. So that's kind of where we've been in the South. Part of Indiana, at least. Missouri, go back over across a couple states here based on planting date, and then getting into the planting dates of that area. These are 30-inch versus 15-inch comparison, so late June. So that's certainly a possible double crop planting period for them. Mid-June to late June is a typical wheat harvest within that state until you get down to Boot Hill, which changes a little bit. We're gaining on the order of 10% yield with their narrow rows. And then as you go later, as most agronomists, physiologists would have a pretty good understanding, that we're going to have even more of a benefit with that narrow row later in the season. So 24% yields are definitely on the lower end. So thinking about planting date effect, or if you want to look at it another way, timely harvest and then therefore double crop planting. We're going from 50 bushel beans, give or take, down to the 30 bushel mark. Okay. Just in 2016, we started doing some collaborative work across these states looking at maturity group by seeding rate. So one concept was the idea, if we're planting a shorter season variety, can we manipulate the system so we have more seeds out there and get equivalent yields? And then also thinking about the idea if we want to start moving further north. And so this is just one of several sets that my student Stephen put together. And this is out of Missouri, but it's catching the plateau that we're talking about with plant population based on maturity groups. So if you take a look at the green line, this is plants per hectare. Sorry, we mixed back and forth here in this kind of a session. So coming on up, maxing out on the order of the 300,000 plants per hectare, so basically 140,000 plants, what we're talking about, okay, with double crop. Okay, that's pretty wild. We'll say they were extremely dry, so in this situation they did irrigate to get them up. But the trend is very much the same across Indiana and other sites. As you come up to a fuller season, let's get her going here, you get in the pink and the reds, yield levels are a little bit higher. The plateaus are fairly similar. It's going to be still near that 340,000, 350,000 plants per hectare mark. So catching a very similar optimal population, one-year data, but then you know we got another set going this year. Maturity group effect, a little bit of a difference, but maybe not as much as someone might have initially thought of. Okay, so that's running from a 3.4 to a 4.8 maturity. Averaging across Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, and Missouri with this data just in 2016, trying to find where the best economical seeding rate would come into play based on maturity group. We're knocking on the door again, right on the order of that 400,000. Let me come up here. The full is a tick higher than, a tick higher than the medium in this case, but that spread isn't very much in terms of yield profit. Okay, so again, there's a lot of possibilities there in thinking about what we can do with this data and move further north of 39 or Highway Interstate 70. Some other kind of points to bring it back a little bit. Seed treatments, usually it's not recommended, especially in dry conditions. Carrie's made this comment, I've seen some of this. We kind of wonder sometimes about stand establishment and whether, and I haven't looked at it, I don't know if Carrie has or anyone else, but you know how much that seed imbibes it, does it take longer with extra goodies on it, so to speak. I'm really curious about Jeremy's comment about the inoculant response. I've always thought about doing that, but I haven't done it. Again, 300,000 acres of soybean or of wheat, and half that's double crop. I just haven't done that. Weed control, start and stay clean. You're going to see a very similar program. Paraquat is fairly common. Mare's tail gets out of control. We're going to burn the suckers down. We are definitely in a situation where we have glyphosate-resistant weeds from mare's tail. We have Palmer amaranth as well. So looking at other herbicide-tolerant varieties are certainly a place where Liberty Lynx are coming in, Extend and others are going to be placed in this kind of cropping system. Foliar management, we have very little data on. We started doing some of this, but just haven't got a whole lot of data on that. We don't have quite the disease pressure that the Mid-South does. Thank you. I'm glad we don't. Jeremy. All right, so I'll switch it a little bit. I think I got a few minutes. I got a few minutes. I can do this. Moving north of 39. So then trying to give you some ideas, and there's certainly people that are already doing this in a true double crop scenario. I alluded to Stephen, my student from is doing the double crop work. He's actually from Ontario. We've got friends up there that are doing double crop in Ontario, and so what can we do? He tried to do it this year on his own farm. It's so. But there's some ideas that we can gain out of this. So what's the problem? I think you guys know it. It's just again frost, again froze, right? And what can we do? This is, happens to be in our northwest farm, and where I tried to do it in 2011, just got frosted out. One frost, you're okay, but two, you're done for, right? You'll just take out your top, but boy, you get that second one, you don't have that layer of leaves to protect you, so you go on down. Here's one of those kind of graphs I use a fair amount in Indiana, depending on when wheat harvest is. If it's coming off early, you better believe I'm bringing this up, because a lot of people are thinking of doing double crop soybeans in the middle part of the state and further north. Our vast majority within Indiana, double crop or wheat acres, southwest, no problem. Northeast, that's a problem. Okay, so if you were looking at just that blue there, October 4th to October 10th is just the 32 degree typical probability of freeze. So again, that back date, we need to have the beans up 90 days prior to that at a minimum. And so that's putting us at July 4th, and that's a very typical wheat harvest day. Okay, so it's a tight window. When I say 2 or 3 days, 7 days makes or breaks doing double crop, that's what I'm talking about. It really does. So, gosh and by golly, I worked with our breeder. He had some shorter wheat breeder and had some shorter lines. He said, you know, let's look at this. And so I said, okay, I'll give him my best. I was a young gun, didn't know any better. So 2011, 2012, 2013, we did it. 2 out of 6 sight years, I actually got a crop. Okay, that's kind of frustrating, isn't it? So with that, we were pushing harvest, pushing the timeliness of that, high moisture, maturity groups. This happened to be West Lafayette, catching that yield effect. I'm going to go up to the Wanata site. 2012 was our drought year, so if there was ever a year to get wheat off early and get a double crop, that was going to be it. But you still need water, right? You still got to get it stand. So last week of June, we were 30 bushel beans, and the normal wheat harvest, we were 10 bushel. I want to end on some of the fun work that we've been doing, something that's old and new again. Don't let the tractor fool you. This is a pretty interesting system. Again, relay beans is nothing new. There's plenty of data that's been out of Purdue before in Ohio State. This farmer called me up 3 years ago, and he's in northern Indiana, northwest, and said, here's what I want to do. I'm doing 15-inch wheat, and I want to do relay. What time should I plant? And so we're kind of going back and forth. I said, I don't want him too leggy. I don't want to be going the first week of June, or first week of May, which was fairly common on the early 1990 kind of work. Get it out there when you're just jointing. Well, we got the planter a little higher. I said, let's go after flowering. Let's not cause any damage to the wheat. And we're talking about May 20th to May 24th. Here's what we're looking at. Gave him that recommendation a couple years ago. This year is our first year actually working together on some studies. So that's what's underneath that canopy right there. That May 24th planting is what it looks like now in June. What's making this system work a little bit better? We've got these shoes, pushers, whatever you want to call them. He'd been doing on 30s. I said, let's do a 15-30-inch comparison. And so we've got these shoes on. That'll push it down. A nice aerial picture. We're doing 15s and 30 comparison. And then, let's see. So you can see the relay beans underneath there. How it's just pushing them down. We can get the stubble down to about 10 inches. And we got soybeans that are already V3, V4. And this got cut July 3rd. Okay. Frontiers and relay cropping. So, I mean, as soon as you get that sucker cut, it opens up. They're leggy, but boy, they just bush and they take off. All right. What's making this system for him, because we've got it in dry land and irrigated. Dry land's okay. Irrigated, this is where he's making it. He's irrigated. That's just kind of looking down the line after harvest day, July 3rd. He's finishing out. No shortage of water. We're making sure we're good there. We cut it Friday, 60 bushel. He's been 55 to 65 bushel on this setup for 3 years. So certainly some possibilities in this relay. Again, water's a key part. The dry corners as well as our dry land small plot version, we're talking 20, 25 bushels in this system. So it kind of gives you the range of what's possible and what's not possible. So I think I'm done.
Next speaker I don't think will mind too much. We have a couple of minutes for questions. Do we have a question or two?
The
shoe can be adjusted to whatever angle and whatever depth that you want to go. So it pushes down the soybean, so then you can cut that stubble even a little bit lower. This year the beans weren't quite as tall as whenever I saw them last year when I worked with them, but This year we honestly had a wheat come off a little early for him, and the soybeans didn't get quietest all week. Probably could have run without the shoes this year, but last year it'll still push them down, but it doesn't flatten them. They pop back up. Yeah.
So what's he got on? Has he got his chopper going on the?
Yeah, he's got an even spread on the back, and so that's dealing with the straw. That's as best he can do. He's done 30s with the duals on the combine, so then we're not running over rows. Part of the systems that I was looking at this year was, okay, we'll do 15s. They closed the row about 10 days faster, even with the water he was putting into that field. Haven't done the stats because we just cut it Friday. The 15-inch field did treatments did 59, and the 30s we did 57 bushel. So it's 2 bushel plus the damage of running over those 15-inch rows. But they kind of come back. The water actually helps move a lot of that straw too. Yeah.
Let's any idea what repeat the question? Yeah.
Say that again.
Any idea what happened with his wheat field? Did he lose a little bit there?
Yeah. So typically, the work that we've had on doing a narrow row, 7.5-inch versus 15-inch wheat, we're a 5 to 10% yield hit. But I'll be quick to say again, he manages it very intensively. Last year, he did 90 bushel wheat and 64 bushel relays. So that beats 300 bushel corn any day.
Okay, let's thank Sean, and again, yeah, we'll have about 15 minutes at the end for more questions.